Hello, I'm Rick Cottom. Welcome to your Maryland. In the spring of 1862, George Alfred Townsend was 21 years old and very much pleased at his situation. A major New York newspaper had just offered him a job covering what looked like the end of the Great War between the states. Townsend, who had no intention of joining the army, nevertheless longed for adventure, and this assignment could launch his career. At 6 a.m, he boarded a train in New York, passed through his native Philadelphia at 11, and arrived in Baltimore at 3. By 5, he was aboard a steamboat, gliding down the Patapsco River toward Fortress Monroe, Virginia, and the great Union Army advancing on Richmond. The trip down the bay took 14 hours, and 300 or 400 people were aboard the steamer. A quarter of them were Army officers and a few wives. About half were contractors and other civilians who saw in the war the key to making their fortunes. That night, as Townsend stood alone at the rail watching the sunset, a lone woman approached him. She was pale. Her face was thin, as though she'd been hungry for a long time, and her clothing was threadbare. She told him she was from Baltimore and asked if he knew the Surgeon General at Fortress Monroe. Townsend replied he did not. "The fact is," she said softly, "I'm going to Williamsburg to find the body of my boy." She shivered and covered her eyes with a thin white hand. Townsend assured her that anyone in federal service would be glad to help her, but she looked up at him and said, "He was not a federal soldier, sir. He was a Confederate." She insisted it wasn't her fault. The boy had been living in Richmond when the war broke out. Now she was afraid that when she found his body, they wouldn't let her take him home to Baltimore, which was under Union Army control. "He was my oldest boy," she said, "and his brother, my second son, was killed at Ball's Bluff. He was in the federal service. I hardly think they'll refuse me the poor favor of laying them in the same grave." Townsend explained that it wouldn't be easy to find her son's body. His grave was probably unmarked. "It was a sad thing," she said, "to know that one's children died enemies. His name was James. Both brothers had been at the Battle of Ball's Bluff on opposite sides. What if James, the Confederate, had fired the shot that killed his little brother, William?" The supper bell rang, and a crowd of soldiers, sutlers, and contractors stampeded into the dining salon. Townsend offered to find the woman a seat at the table, but she refused. To save what little money she had brought a small amount of food and planned to spend the night on a chair in the saloon. She bid him goodbye and walked away. Townsend went in to dinner, where men rushed to the tables like as many beasts of prey. An army captain made short work of a whole mackerel, then grabbed the plate of butter and spread the entire half pound on a single slice of bread. A sutler reached across Townsend's face and speared a chicken with his fork, then, to everyone's disgust, wolfed down the whole thing himself. A waiter approached with a plate of steak. Before he could set it down, two soldiers seized it for themselves. "Eat all you can," laughed one. "The fare's amazin' high. Must make it out in grub." There was a piano in the salon, and a few women joined the men in singing the Star-Spangled Banner. A soldier got out his hornpipe, and several couples began to dance. One young man bellowed out a passage from Shakespeare. The night passed by gleefully and reputably, Townsend recalled later, but the young correspondent couldn't forget the pale woman from Baltimore. One could hardly realize, in the cheerful eyes and active figures of the dance, the sad uncertainties of the time, he wrote of that night. He did not know then, as he would soon come to know, that he had seen two faces of this terrible war. One was masculine, heedless of danger, driven variously by passion, glory, patriotism, sacrifice, corruption, and greed. The other moved quietly in the shadows, as lonely women, in numbers Townsend could not yet fathom, moved sadly and slowly across the war-torn landscape, often cold and hungry and alone, searching for loved ones who would never return.